Hey, Charles, how's it going?
Good. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
It's good that nobody has any idea what time of the day we start or what day of the week it is. We just record and
yeah.
Everybody listens to it thinking it's probably that day that they listen to it. And that's when we did
it. Weekends.
It could be weekends as well, too. And I was saying off mic as we were just getting a little bit of coffee and you getting tea. I like having the Finnish Carpenters on the show.
Thank you.
Because you guys are highly skilled and for the most part, slightly secretive. Because I want to start the show just by saying, I think the younger generation of Finnish carpenter thinks that if they buy the best tools, they become the best carpenter. And I don't think that's the case when it comes to your trade.
When I started, we didn't have as much as we have today. And then what we have today, I'm taking advantage of. I'm not nothing against. I'm not a type of old school. So if there's a tool or a technology, whatever it is, that is available, I'm taking. Mm-hmm. And if it's working for my business, I'm taking. Because I'm not looking to have hours and hours, you know, off-site doing quotes or managing things or figuring out things. And not this. Or even on-site, back when I started, the tools were not like this. So then today we have tools to drill doors, to machine doors for handles that we didn't have that time. And then work was like, yeah, no, that needs a lot of talent. Nothing against talent. There's a lot of old school carpenters, Italians, like, no, they are retired now. They are pretty good. But then why not use the technology?
100%.
So then, yeah. But then what is the technology also? If you don't have the talent to use, if you don't have the acknowledgement to use, it's not only unboxing and then, yeah, let's use it. No, you have to know. And then a lot of things on my work, I don't tell everybody because either I found out through the years, it took me 20, 22 years to find out, or it's like on the go. It's always like this. Every project is a project. And then I always tell my true carpenters, so this is the plan. When the plan changes, we adapt.
100%.
Can be like just... like this.
You can't.
Right? Can be.
And you can't just be relying all the time on the training wheels.
No.
Right? They're there. You have them, but you can't always just rely on it. And I'm not saying by not sharing is a negative at all. I'm not saying that at all. I think it's a good thing because you want people to figure it out.
Yeah. So then with my guys, I always had this thing about giving the opportunity to learn. So then mm-hmm. we, all these 22 years, had several people. The last few years, at least three or four of them at the beginning from 2009, 2010, they are on their own now. So they learned, they had opportunity, they start with me, they learned, and they had all the experience outside of me, and they start their own.
So does it bother you, Charles, that they went
no,
on their own?
Actually, last year I talked to all of them.
You still talk to them, right?
I still talk to them.
Yeah.
Only one, he didn't keep on carpentry. He went in partnership with somebody else in another business. But then,
out of construction?
Oh, construction, but was brick.
Okay.
Nothing
he
to
went
do with
from carpentry to mason.
Brick. Yeah, exactly.
That's new.
Different.
Yeah.
And he was pretty good. He was with me for 3.5 years back in 2008 until 2011. And then he wanted his own with another one of my guys. They did pretty good. Then some point, he decided he wanted to make more money or whatever. And then he partnership with his brother-in-law, I guess. And
I guess there is more money in masonry, but yes, harder work.
Too much.
And Mother Nature telling you when you can work.
Yeah. But then, no, that's one of the reasons that people ask me, why you choose Finnish?
Finnish.
Because I'm inside.
You're inside
all year.
Most of the time warm.
Yeah.
Right.
And then if something goes behind, like the schedule always goes behind, right? So I always. But then I still inside, no matter what. So if I don't work 1 week in the winter, well, it's 1 week in the winter, and I know I'm going to work more in the summer. It's okay.
It's totally fine. Let me share the information. Charles is here at @_Finnish_carpenter. You can reach him at 416-825-9335. I'm wearing Tools in the Trade Bootcamp t-shirt. Thanks, guys, for the tea. And also, you guys are doing amazing work. They do this weekly or weekend bootcamp all through the summer, just highlighting the trades to all new people coming up to it. It could be young people, it could be old people, it could be transition careers and stuff like that. So I love what they're doing. I also want to talk about Tim from RVC sent me a post of, I guess in the States, they're starting to sell the idea of putting these air blowers in showers to dry your shower. And he asked my opinion about it. And I just said, no, I don't want to like this. It doesn't make any sense to me. And in the video that he shared with me, you have all these little ports, these 1-inch ports all over the shower. And then you hit this button like you're hitting the exhaust fan, and it starts to blow air to dry the shower. And I'm like, okay, nobody's talking about the cost. There's a motor, and then you got to run all these lines to get to it. There's a main PVC or ABS line that branches off with these other rubber lines. And then also nobody talks about the cost of the tile work that has to go around each of these ports. So you got to drill a hole. And I'm like, I'm guessing maybe $2,000 for this unit. And then I started thinking, what's the point of this? Because even if you have a couple and they share a shower, that it's going to take an hour or two with this unit to dry the shower, or it's going to take maybe 6 or 7 hours to just dry naturally, right? So a couple wakes up in the morning, they're both going to get in the shower within an hour or two. So the second person's still going to get into a wet shower regardless how you look at it. And their thought process is, oh, you need to dry it faster so then you won't form mold. And I'm like, you're not going to form mold if you build the shower correctly at all. It's designed to be wet and then dry and then wet and then dry. So I didn't agree with it. I left it. And then I found what I really found funny is in their promotional video, all the plates on the receptacles or on the fan buttons, on the timers and everything like that, they were all screwed plates. And I'm thinking, you want to spend $2,000 or plus, I'm guessing on the amount of it, but now you're using screwed plates. Like, nobody uses screwed plates today, these days in job sites. Everybody's all using screwless plates, right? Mm-hmm. So I just thought it was kind of funny, but I just said to him, yeah, I'm not interested in going down that path. I don't think it's a good idea. I think it's a novelty, and some people would want it in their luxury bathrooms, but it doesn't work for me. So mm-hmm. I just wanted to share that. But now we're going to get into wood. I want to talk all about wood, right? So even off mic, we were just talking... you were DeWalt or no, you weren't DeWalt.
I was DeWalt.
You was DeWalt. What is it in Brazil?
Well, now there's DeWalt. As far as I know, there's
who's the number one in Brazil?
I think it would be DeWalt.
But DeWalt. Then,
yeah, they have a little bit of Makita, like old, very old models, like totally different than we have here. So, and not cordless. They are not onto cordless.
Everything's powered.
Yeah.
Why are they not cordless?
I don't know. I think it's that the cost of importing to Brazil, it's very high.
Very high.
So if here we pay, let's say $30 for something imported from US, that is like 3-4 times more. So it's just ridiculous. And then plus the currency is ridiculous.
It's insane.
So when I go, my money works 4 times more. So that's good. It's pretty good. Can't complain.
But you set up here and now you're going back there. And so that's why you have the dollars and it's...
Yeah, exactly.
But if you're just from there and you're working, it's challenging, right?
Is it? It is. There is a high level of poor and rich. Very high. So then, no, a lot of people are going well, but not majority. It's not. Never been...
Well, the majority of the country, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the majority of the country is still classed as third world, right?
Still.
Right?
And unfortunately, we it's a funny thing. We have a president who was in prison for corruption.
I remember reading.
It's like in the States now. No, the guy is being accused for
it's almost a rite of passage, huh?
Corruption, and he's running.
You need to be corrupt, get caught, go threatening to jail, and then become a leader.
Yeah. So hopefully, Camila is going to make it.
There's all kinds of interesting things, but when did you move from there to here?
It was 2002.
Okay.
Yeah. So then...
got right into construction?
No. I came and then I started studying. So then I came with the idea, I'm going to study language. I was studying English before, but then I came, I'm going to study English. I took an year, 2003, I started looking for work, and then I tried several things, like from drywall, framing.
Oh, you tried all the trades?
Except the other, like plumbing and electrical, I tried the hard ones. Framing in March was snowing.
Rain.
Yeah.
Snow or rain, depending on, yeah.
Exactly. So and then one day I got this call from this guy, and he was a Finnish carpenter. I remember my first job was Harbourfront, the two buildings round, right in front of Harbourfront.
Weston.
Weston.
Is in the Weston Hotel or something like that?
No, there's a two condos. Right in front of
Harbourfront. Oh, the condos. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I know exactly where you're talking about.
Right in front of Harbourfront. So that was my first place to work.
And what floor?
I don't know, was a high floor. It was about a week that we worked there, and then went to low rise, and then I started working with other people. So I remember I was afraid of Microsoft. Yeah, I was afraid of Microsoft. I told him, I'm not doing this. Let me give my time, etc., etc. And then today, he's like, I remember this. And then today for me, he's like, no, why?
Right? So what did he get you to do if you weren't chopping?
I was cutting baseboard.
Oh, you're okay.
I started cutting baseboard, making $8 an hour.
The classic Toronto step bevel?
It was flat stock
back then.
Then when I moved to low rise, I worked for these two brothers, and we were working for 12 hours, 7 to 7 every day. And it was
hourly
all day.
Or daily?
Daily.
Daily rate?
No, that 12 hours a day, and then it was 8 hours per hour.
$8 per hour. Wow.
And then I was cutting baseboard all day, main floor, second floor. On the floor. Didn't have any.
No table.
No table, nothing.
No stand, no collateral stand, nothing.
I don't think it was any in the market back then.
No.
2003.
No.
Right? So, and then today.
Would have been sawhorses, and you would have put a plank.
Yeah, maybe. Sawhorses always been. But then was like my knees were like too much pain.
I always had this fear of seeing miter saws or table saws on the floor, especially table saws. When you see job site table saws and you see them on the floor and the blades open,
yeah,
I just always had this fear of like, that's like someone could just trip.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone could just trip and it could be on or off. Even if it's off, you could be tripping. And if you put your hand out, you hit the blade. Yeah. You
One
know.
Thing I take care of on my jobs is I never let cables or hoses. Hoses I eliminated in December. I got out.
All battery.
So then my cables are still, so at least for my table saw, I don't put anything in front on the path that we go into the table saw. So I go around the miter saw, around everybody, but not on the path. Right? So then 2 years ago, I was in a job site in Mississauga, and then this inspector show up. And I had...
A ministry of labor?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we had a lot of cables coming out of the garage and hoses and going inside the house. It was a big house. But then he said, no, this is a tripping hazard. So then I agree, man. I didn't have any others. And then we had to tuck around, etc. But then it was a lot of people, so then things got messy. So then I took my time to find out which Barry nail gun I was going to get, and getting Metabo, which is lighter, faster than everybody else.
Battery.
Yeah, faster and lighter. So then I was surprised.
Is this Metabo?
Hitachi.
After Hitachi bought it, right?
Yeah. No, actually, after Metabo.
No, Metabo bought Hitachi.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, it's an Hitachi gun.
MTB.
Yeah, okay. And it's a good gun?
Very good. So then I've been using since December. Well, my berries are 4 amps, and then I have 3 amps or 4 amps. And I have one which is a little bit
you
more.
You do both, 16 and 18 gauge on the battery?
I had the 16.
Okay.
But it's a monster. The thing is a monster. No. I went back and then asked them. I went to Hitachi and then asked, give me a 18. I don't want this. Give me 18. Right?
It's too powerful, the 16?
No, it's too big.
It's too big?
Too big. Too big to...
Bigger than a typical 16?
No. Maybe yes, at the back.
Okay.
But then it was, to put on the belt, it was...
No, it's too much. Too much. Too heavy.
Yeah, too heavy. So then I can't get away with 18. It's fine. So then I got 2 and then 123. And it's going well, right? So then I still have the other ones. So just in, and I still have the compressors, just in case anything goes wrong.
You're hanging on to it just for now.
Yeah.
But would the battery last all day?
Last 3 days I was alone.
A battery?
Last all day. I changed one battery a day and a half.
Wow.
Doing about $13. And about $13 and 2, 4, 6, about 8 windows. Not bad.
That's pretty good, actually. That's very, very good.
Exactly. But if you have some carpenter who likes to put nails, and then it's different. I don't like much.
The pin, the 23, what's the length it gives you? 2?
No, maximum 1 3/8. No, actually 1 3/8.
1 3/8,
yeah,
huh?
But for 1 3/8, doesn't take the nail all the way in. So then I use 1 inch.
It leaves it proud?
Leaves.
A tiny bit, really?
Yeah.
Even if you, okay, because battery, how can you adjust the depth?
I can, but then it's already on for everything in and doesn't go on.
Hmm.
And then it's fine. So then I'm not complaining because I use mostly 1 inch anyways. It's fine. So I'm looking now to have the table saw, also cordless. My table saw is DeWalt. DeWalt has a...
Corded or cordless?
Corded. DeWalt has the small version that Fabio has, for example.
Yeah, I know the one, yeah.
He has
one. I had that one a long time ago, yeah.
So and then, but the big one they didn't make yet. I know Metabo has one. I saw the kitchen people.
Same job site size, like a little tiny one?
Big, like the big one,
okay.
DeWalt.
Yeah.
I think it uses 36 volts, which can go away with the 18 volts also, and then I have 18. But
will it last all day, though?
Yeah, but then I would have to buy 40 volts, and I don't know if my charge is going to go for 40 volts.
And you have to buy a new charger and everything.
So now I have a set of 18 volts Makita, 18 volts Metabo, and then 40 volts Makita for the Mahiro saw. So then I can't go much off this, right? So then it's going to be like a mess for me.
Am I wrong to like... I've never seen any manufacturer of battery operated tools pride themselves on talking about battery maintenance and longevity of battery. Nobody ever talks about that.
Nobody said that.
Because the thing is, you use it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're constantly recharging a battery when it's not fully depleted, it actually damages the battery.
But then,
it?
If I also saw a video a long time ago, was about if you leave the battery to go all the way, and then the battery is not going to recharge again.
It won't catch it again.
Yeah,
it
won't catch it.
I've heard that same thing as well too.
But then when you have one light, the one bar light,
that's when you should charge it.
Exactly. So then the Makita Mirosol, for example, when it gets one bar, just I can see that's not turning the blade as should be. Right?
Do you remember the cars back in the 70s and 80s? They used to have the gimmick where the door was left open. They have a voice and it said your car door is ajar. This is in America. They used to do that. I think that's what they need to bring now for the battery. So when you get down to the one light, they're like a voice should come out of the battery and just say time to charge the battery.
If the
battery in different languages too. It could be like Portuguese, Italian, Croatian, everybody, right? It goes through a whole gambit. It goes through all of them and then until one trade understands, okay, now I know what he said. Yeah, English exactly. Would be the last.
Yeah. Well, also, I'm not sure about the tools, batteries, but the cell phones are by cycle, right? So if you charge a cell phone, it's 50%, that's one cycle. If you charge 100%, it's another cycle. So then as you, there's like 1,000 cycles.
And the cycles reduce over time.
Exactly. So my I'm still using a BlackBerry. Nobody believes me. I still use a BlackBerry. And I changed this battery back in November last year. And it's not going well anymore.
What year is that one?
This is 2021. I like the keyboard.
That's the reason why.
Exactly. That's the only reason.
BlackBerry's still around, which is good. It was kind of funny. I was having a meeting with a friend of mine. I was going to his house, and I started talking to him about, I miss flip phones. And then he pulls up the armrest, and he goes, pulls out a flip phone. He goes, I bought it on Amazon, a flip phone. And sometimes I take my SIM card out, and I use the flip phone when I want to disconnect from all the smart features, where I don't want people to automatically send me stuff. It forces me not to text. It forces me to make a phone call and talk to people. Mm. So he goes, I like the disconnecting. And I go, how much was a flip phone? He goes, $80.
And I'm Fido is still selling on the website.
That's not a bad way to... I mean, I wouldn't mind having a flip phone and pulling it out and everybody stare at you like, what's going on?
I'm
going
to give it to my kids.
They won't know how to use it, right? They won't understand it.
Yeah, but. I got, you know, those dial phones?
The rotary.
I got one, a black one, a couple of years ago and put
from
on the
where,
table.
From where? eBay or something?
No, I was coming back from Niagara, and then there's this antique flea market on the road.
And it was there.
Yeah, it was there. So then... I put on the table and told, oh, dial something.
Here's your number, 000000000. So worst number ever. We all grew up on that. That's interesting. But yeah, so glue. What's your favorite glue?
I've been using one which is like a fiber wood glue. I bought from Andrews Electric on Oakdale.
What's the name of it?
The place?
No, the glue. The glue, brand.
I don't know the name of the glue. There's no name on the front. I don't pay attention on the name.
What's the open time on it?
It's like half an hour is dry.
Really?
Yeah. So there's two types they sell. One is yellow, one is white. I like the white.
Why are the electricians selling the glue?
No, it's Angelo Electric, he's not an electrician.
Oh, no, wait, no. I've heard of Angelo Electric. Angelos,
they sharp blades.
Yeah.
All the Portuguese carpenters and Brazilian carpenters, they go there.
I've heard. I need to pass by and take a look at it. Yeah.
Mike and Fabio, they are cousins.
Okay.
The story started with Mike's grandfather, and then went to his father, and then with him.
A real mom and pop shop.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then the cousins take care. So then everything I need
is there.
Is them. So I need a couple of years ago, I bought a door jig for hinges.
Yep.
And then I hid that thing.
The BlackBerry.
Yeah.
You hate it. Which one was it? Was it the Freud or the?
No, it was a trend.
Trend,
from,
yeah.
From Atlas.
Why did you hate it?
Because this is made in UK. Right, so then they didn't count a 1 3/4 door, and then we used 1 3/4 door all the time. Wasn't working, so then what?
It was designed for a 1 3/8 door?
1 3/8. And then to make work 1 3/4 was too complicated, so then I took to Angelo and said, you know what, this is my wood jig, this is the jig I bought, make this work for me. So then there was a little round thing that I put on the jig and then touched the door.
Yeah.
So then they made a bigger one for me to work on the 1 3/8. So then also, no, I have my clearance for the door and jam different. So then the jig doesn't have that. And then, okay, so how am I going to do? And then Mike's father did a L shape for me. That's my set off, 7/8. So they just put on top of the jig, then put on the door. I don't have to worry about anything. Done. So then I can't make a mistake.
He's machining it for you?
He's a machine guy.
Really?
He makes anything in aluminum, steel, whatever. He's pretty good. I have a few things done there, like for my Mirosol wing. Went through a lot of things, but we got it done. Anything that I need that's machining, I just take to them.
Did Fabio take too much time on building his wings?
I was thinking about this. He likes those things, really.
I like them too, but it just seems like he took a long, long time to build them. And then I remember having a conversation briefly with him about he wanted to try to sell them and mass produce them. And I was like, you're going to have a challenge that, because I think it's very individual. I think everybody designs it for their own saw setup.
I spoke with him. In the beginning, I spoke with him. He said, I'm trying to do in aluminum. So then I found out there's a guy in the States called Red House Tools. He just made one in aluminum, fix everything. So then I was thinking, you know, this guy really fixed the problem, because we put on the dual stand.
Yeah.
There's a bracket under the Mirosol, which fits any Mirosol, goes into the bracket of the stand, the Walt or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then there's another part going to on the end, and then there's the wing and the wing. That fix everything. So then if there's any other solution out there, so I don't know, but this guy, he made it 100%.
Do you trust Charles? Like, you know, they're doing all the digital measuring now. They all on the guides, on the miter saw. Do you like trust them?
I use a laser to measure baseboard. That's the only thing I do. But there's this thing that came in the market a few years ago that you put in a miter saw and then measure and then just... for me, for someone doing framing, for example, it's always the
you
same.
You have height. A 16th or an H that you can be forgiven on, right?
Exactly.
Finish carpentry.
I think it would be too hard to cutting casings and then and then have to adjust again. And not a fan of that. And then also it's expensive.
Right? You know, it's one little trick that I noticed that the younger generation doesn't realize. I was always of the mindset, it didn't matter if it was... I guess it was specifically poplar. When you start getting into poplar trim and you're getting raw stock and you're getting the trim come in, I always sacrificed one edge. I always wanted a clean starting edge.
Yeah, you have to.
But the younger generation never did that. They just assumed that the bundle came from it. They just took it, measured it right from that source. And then they realized, hang on, there's a slight offness. And I'm like, the guy at the mill shop,
he doesn't care about it.
He's not cutting
it. It's not his job.
His focus is about putting the right color paint on the end of it to make sure that it's the right kind of wood, right? And so I always said, listen, sacrifice. You have to sacrifice this. And plus also inspect it to see if there might be an actual crack in
even
it.
Even MDF. So then we have to cut one of the edges. Just know, because the rough edge of the MDF is just rough. And then when we cut, it becomes clean. Cleaner, right? It's better.
What do you prefer, MDF or poplar?
I prefer poplar.
Or finger joint pine?
horrible, horrible. You take the thing and just come apart. Come on.
It's like if you're having lunch, you could just snap it and use it as a toothpick, right?
I see some carpenters doing this.
Because that's what it's good for.
So
you're MDF or you're Poplar?
Poplar.
I mean, but not a lot of clients want to spend the money on Poplar. Well,
custom homes usually is 90% Poplar. 9%, and there's a 10% of people still thinking can go away with MDF. Maybe the baseboard. Yeah, baseboard is not bad to go MDF.
MDF always makes me nervous when we put it in bathrooms.
Yeah. The rain we had last week, right? My neighborhood, one of the streets, everybody got flooded. So then I was working two blocks away from my home, and it was two new custom homes. The basement got flooded. So then it's a brand new house, but the sump pump didn't work. There's no power, no sump pump, got flooded. Then I went there. Okay, let's see what happened. All the doors are sticking. Every single one is sticking. So, right?
That's what you get.
Yeah.
MDF is such a sensitive material. And even if you paint it, it's never painted on the back.
No, and then also it doesn't matter which paint. If even there's a moisture type of paint, that doesn't work.
And you can't start using the exterior grade MDF.
But moldings are not done by that. Right? No, so casings
you can't. You can't right at that point. So it's like Poplar, you can get away with it and it'll still survive. Even if it gets a little bit of wet, it'll still survive.
My Poplar kinds of swallow. Also.
It does. It does, but not to the extreme of the sponge from MDF.
I put an MDF outside a couple of years ago, and then I left for a year. So the 3/4 became 1.5.
I've seen that before. I had a framer teach me. He was like, when we were looking at building code and there was a house being built, there's always another house being built on the same street, right? So you always compare. Everyone comes in and you look at it as you're holding your coffee and you're looking at it, right? And then we noticed that they were sheathing the exterior with 1/4-inch OSB.
Wow.
That was code at the time.
Wow.
So then I remember the framer telling me, Ziggy, and I always try to get him on the show. He was telling me, don't worry, you know, a few days of rain, that'll become 1/2-inch, no problem.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's true. It will become 1/2-inch. It's going to expand. So that's what, I mean, you save some money, but what are you saving really?
Well, like
at the end.
I've been seeing people trying to save money with my work saving on the labor, right? So for example.
Or challenging your prices.
Or is both things are worse. But then I seen people, I got messages, emails, and then say, no, this carpenter walked away. This guy walked away. And then I go to take a look and then take pictures. And my pictures are so nice because it shows all the gaps I can put in my finger.
That bad, huh?
Yeah. So then I seen baseboard casings on the floor that I can put in my finger off the floor. And doors not working. Or the strike plate, instead of being routed properly, was a teeth. Not a router, it was a teeth. I went to a house a few weeks ago. The carpenter did installed two doors. The hinges were open with his teeth. Guaranteed.
Really?
No router, no chisel, because it was horrible. And the owner
did he have a blindfold on when he was doing it?
It wasn't a carpenter. There's a lot of people say, I can do it. I was selling one of my, I had a Makita nail gun, and then don't use anymore, don't like anymore. Sold to a guy, and then I asked him, are you a carpenter? Yeah, I do a few things. There you go. Anybody can be a carpenter. But then acknowledgement, like I took 22 years to be where I am, to know things, and then I'm still learning. There are things that my guys do and say, oh, okay, well, that's a bad idea. I didn't think about 20 years, didn't think about this.
How young are your guys?
One is my age.
Okay.
A little bit, 48. Okay. Another one is 33, something like this.
Okay, so they get it. They understand it.
They get it, yeah.
But it takes time.
I think depends how the job goes. Like I have friends that went to work with somebody and then come back complaining, saying, no, my boss doesn't let me to do anything. So then I let people. I kind of push to do. I push. Because I can't do anything.
What, he just wanted him to sweep or something? You want to pick up offcuts?
No, it's like you nail casing, you nail baseboard. You nail casing, you nail baseboard. I'm not going to teach you how to install a door. Well, door is the most main thing in a house. Close and open, it has to close and open properly. Open the hinges, install the handles, everything. Right? So then I push my people because I cannot do everything. If I want to do everything, I work alone. That's it, right? So then I want the people to work, and then they are there to give me profit, of course.
No, you're running a business.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So okay, like everybody else, like if you have a Tim Hortons, the people are working, they're going to give you profit. The owner is not going to go and serve coffee. right? So then I push people to learn and give the opportunity to learn. So there are people in the past, they didn't have any talent, and then that's it. So then one day, 2 days a week, don't have a talent, can't help. But there are guys, they are pretty good. So I remember one, he now is in drywall contractor, but he...
He was doing years of finish?
No, he when he moved here, he went to work with me. And then maybe a month on, and then I taught him how to install doors and windows, etc. And then I had one guy back then, was with me for a while, and then he was very lazy. And then he trimmed a window very bad, extremely bad. And then
when you say bad, what do you mean? Joints, miters, or?
Everything. So then I got this other guy a month in, so I told him, oh, remove everything and do it, redo it. And he did 100%. But he didn't want to stay. He want to make more money. Well, a month, I can't give him. I have to be fair with everybody. So, and then he went to partnership with someone, drywall, and then became a drywall contractor. But he was pretty good on it. And I still talk to him today. Still.
But he's doing well with drywall.
Well, very well.
Well, good for him. I mean, yeah, you're right. The door is probably the most challenging part. You got to give a person the chance to try it out. And the door, if they do it correctly or incorrectly, will tell you a lot about that person.
Exactly. Right? And also, there are secrets. So every door, every 1¾ door, they have a bevel. Without a bevel, the door is not going to work. And then I see...
Hinge bevel and also strike bevel? Or are you just doing strike both
sides,
right?
Both sides.
Some guys do just the strike and they leave the hinge.
No, you can't. Because then the hinge is going to touch, the door is going to touch the jamb.
Yeah.
And they need that little space to just to not to touch and not to bounce. Because door bouncing is the worst thing. Yeah. Or is the jamb is crooked, twisted, because it's a lumber anyways, not treated lumber. Or the way it was installed, not straight.
Could be racked, yeah. Right?
But then if there's no bevel, it's not going to work ever. The only exception... You know those subdivision houses, right? So they use hollow doors.
The prefab unit.
Yeah, exactly. Those, they don't have bevels, but they don't have anything to constrain them.
Three pieces.
That's it. I start on that thing. So then,
no, I get right? it. I always kind of walk past them fast when I'm at the mill shops, and I'm like, I don't want them to rub off on me, right? I don't want to, like, I see them loading up. I see them being stacked. I see them being wrapped on pallets and they're going off the job sites. I see the reason why we need them. I get
production.
Production. I totally see it. They're good to start, but I think that when it comes to finished carpentry, I think there's it's like a university. You have to start at the bottom and get the basics, and then you got to get doors and work doors and perfect doors. Then you got to possibly do a double door and try to make that work. Yeah. And then eventually at some point, you are going to come across pocket door land.
You know what? I met carpenters through these years that they don't know what a prehang is. They think the prehang is the one Home Depot sell. But it's not. Prehang is this thing that will work in, you put in the subdivision house. Everybody lives in a subdivision house sometime.
Yeah.
So they don't know that. So then I find amazing that they go into custom, but they don't know anything about the basic. So the basic, which is a pre-hang thing. Back my time, I used to install a pre-hang in 5 minutes. So then one time I met this Portuguese
from
guy.
From a rough frame, door finish, you're swinging it in.
5 minutes with the door stop, etc. So 5 minutes. Then I met this Portuguese guy. He would beat me. I was putting the frames ahead of him, and he was able to catch me less than 5 minutes. What the heck?
Holy cow.
So fast. That's the only guy who was faster than me back then. But then, so then when I started, this worked as a base because I started in 2003. Back in 2006, I started custom. So then in 3 years, I had to live with this, right? And then it was a good thing to learn.
It's a good education.
Exactly. So then... Guys today, so then guys that I teach, for example, and work with me 3 years, 4 years, whatever, they don't know anything about subdivision. They don't know how to do those doors. And then I remember back in 2021, I had these two guys, and they'd never seen prehang. So then I got one small house to do, and then, okay, let's work on this prehang. And then I taught them. I just stepped back and then do this, level the doors here and there, and then they did. They learned. You're talking about double doors. Is the worst nightmare for everybody. Because, you know, especially the guys they start.
Starts with the framers.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, you know, flooring and then the walls and it's everything, right? So then my actual guy, he had the problem with the double doors that I used to tell him in the beginning.
What was the problem? He would either get the top or the bottom not line up?
No, he would spend 3 hours in a double door.
Okay.
Yeah, so now leave the double door for last. I'm going to do it. There was one time I went away and then had a house with three bedrooms with double doors. And I told him, leave for last. I'm not going to be here. Leave for last. Do everything else. And I don't want to know how you did. Mm-hmm. And he did. He did. With 8-foot doors. Right? And the openings were tight. But was, okay, he did it. But then double doors, you have to cool. So like when I go in front of a double door, I just relax.
You have to prepare yourself.
Slow. Like there is this guy in Tennessee, inside carpentry.
Okay.
Lewis. His name is Lewis. And he said one time, when you get into something, you have to focus. You have to get your mind on it. So then I used to do this more without realizing. When I heard him saying, so then, yeah, he's completely right. He works alone or with one guy, and he does all the big houses in Tennessee there. So then it's true. So when I get to something, if something happens on site, like a material delivery or a lot of people, and then it's a mess and then messes with everybody, minds, and I have to do something, I have to cool myself and then take a deep breath, because if I make a mistake, it's going to be worse to fix.
Yeah, to fix it.
Yeah, if I drill a handle in the wrong spot, I can't fix it. I can't, right?
You get one shot to get it bang on perfect, so you might as well take your time.
But the handles are only 2 ways, 2¾ and 2⅜.
Yeah.
If I make 2 inches, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
Right? So then there are things on my job that I really have to step back and just calm and then, okay. Like the last 4 days I was working alone was so nice. Me, myself, and chocolate. Chocolate is my dog.
Because you could just clear your mind.
Exactly.
And then you can get it done.
And I got done everything. So then last day was an electrician there. And then it's fine. No, he's in his way, my way. And then I was almost done anyways. So then it's pretty good.
How quickly is the younger generation eager to do pocket doors? Or they don't want to do them at all?
When I started, pocket doors were not like this, with a soft close. And
they're insane right now.
And then the Crowder made a very good track now.
Yeah.
With everything. So back then, we didn't have soft close anything, so then it was like, eh. But today, I'm learning from other people also, from Fabio, from Michelle. The way they're doing is pretty good, with the split jams and then the spacer and then the other brackets to hold the split jam, which back in the day we didn't have that.
No,
right?
It's all new technology. I would say in the last 6 or 7 years.
Somebody created.
Yeah. So they made it a lot easier to make it bang on perfect, right?
Exactly, yeah. So then pocket doors, the last 4 years being the fever. If you do a pocket door nice with a split jam exactly on the space and then closing and opening, okay, well, that's a winning, right? And the pocket door was made to save space.
Yeah.
So like last December, I was trimming a house with 90% of the doors with pockets.
The clients were willing to pay all that extra?
Small house.
Yeah. You needed space.
Exactly. Major renovation, third floor new, but then didn't have space to swing. So then we had the basement was swing, and then two closets on the second floor. That's it. Everybody else, pockets. So then, install the track. It's not a lot. Install the track on the roof framing. How you do this? You don't have the 2x6. You can see how it is. And I created my own style to make it. And then center, right? So then if I make my center, I'm okay.
It should work.
Exactly. Instead of just trying to measure on a 2x6, it doesn't work, right? So then you have to make something else. So I create a system that I put my track into something else. And then I center my track into that piece. And then that piece is exactly the cavity, the width of the cavity. So then can go wrong. Center is center, right? So then there's a lot of other things also. And then how are you going to, the distance you're going to leave from the floor, all those things.
You need to have all the answers for everything, so all the finishing.
These things, the young guys getting now, like somebody who worked an year. I got a resume last week. This guy saying, I have an year of carpentry. So then he put one of the names there, and it's kind of my friend also. So he worked for my friend, the guy who worked for me and then went solo.
Okay.
So and then I go to my friend and ask, oh, does this guy know everything? No.
You never know anything.
Yeah. So exactly. So and then these new guys, like 1 year, 2 years, they, I think it's in every kind of trade. I'm 6 months, a year, two. Yeah, I can go work for myself. No, you can't. So you can make a price cheap. You can make something, but you can't make everything. And then what happens to these guys? They walk away or they. One thing I do, I put my face on my videos so that people know who I am.
Yeah.
Because if I do something wrong, I fix it.
Yeah.
And I try not to do it wrong. If I make a mistake.
But you'll own it if something happens.
Exactly. So I take charge of whatever happens, right? Then if my guys do something wrong, I also is my charge, right? So it's my thing to do. But then there, these guys, they work 6 months and they think, I'm going to go and work for
it's
myself.
Not enough time.
First of all, they don't put their faces there. So nobody know who are they. That's what happens.
It's also a secretive way for them to hire somebody else to do it. And then they charge they charge the same price, but they hire somebody else that's going to do it less. And then they make a little bit of money off the back of that. And then the client gets a good enough trim job, which is not what you want to sell.
I seen on these 20 years, I seen people compromising quality versus money. There's a lot of people I see, this guy is $10,000 less or $5,000, whatever the money is, right? But they are compromising. And then weird thing is they still thinking this is going to cost $5,000 and yours is $8,000, but this is going to give me the same quality. How come?
It's not.
No, I have an example. Like 2 months ago, this guy calls me and then he explained me how he did it. He called me and another three other guys. One of the guys were double my price. So I respect. He thinks he's going to get, he has a talent, has a living. Nothing wrong to get double.
There's no question that this price is incorrect.
Wrong. Yeah, there's no question. But the other two guys below me, which was half of my price, one of them asked the owner, how you want me to do this? How the owner wants you to do this, so you have to know how to do. Because the trim work that this owner wanted was the continuous review casing baseboard. So then you don't know how to do this? And the other guy said, no, we start
it's
with
a continuous picture frame. Mitering,
exactly.
You need to understand.
It's called jack miter.
Yeah.
Right? So this guy didn't know how to do. And the other guy said, we're going to start with the baseboard. How? You start with the doors, and then you find your spot for the baseboard.
Baseboard was one height, and the casing was a different width?
Exactly. It was 5.5, the baseboard.
So it's a step miter, right? And you're right. You have to start with the door, and then
exactly.
The base.
So then even in a normal thing, so you can predict where the casing is going to be. Because we do a hinge on site and jam on site, and then the door can go left and go right, can whatever, right? So it depends on that.
No shoe mold on that one either, probably.
No shoe molding. Yeah, it was nice. And it was pretty nice.
But how bad was the floor? The floor was good?
House was like 70 years old. And how do I know that? Spikes on the baseboard. And then I Google... When the nail gun was invented.
So I remember seeing that on your post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 1950s,
the pneumatic nailer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So and then I found out that everybody below that or before that was then, before the nail gun and the miter saw, right?
It was spikes.
Yeah.
I always, if I find them, I keep them.
Oh.
I have the old spikes, right? Yeah. Some projects that I've worked on. It's just because... I can't imagine the trades working this way and doing this, but that's how they did
measure
it.
The small pieces.
Yeah.
How they do small pieces, right? So then, I don't know if back then was small nails, but even the spikes, how we install doors doing spikes, and then, it was plaster also, right?
So then it was then, also, wasn't it the mastic for the filler?
Uh-huh.
It was that other pliable putty. That's what they used to use to fill the nail holes, right?
Mm.
So it was flexible back then. This is way, way back then. And that's how it would get painted. But then it got painted over with lead paint. You'd have a thicker paint on it. So then it would hide it differently, right?
You notice that this back then, the doors were not standard like today. You can get a 23 inches door or 20, something like
this. The doors were made on site.
Yeah.
Like they were fabricated. Like you also, have you also done? Yeah, you've made doors from scratch.
No, doors on site never made. Interior doors.
No, but the actual doors themselves. You built the doors yourself?
The hinges.
No, the actual panel, the door itself. Are you ordering all the doors?
No, the doors, if the project is big and then I send to my supplier to Brenlow.
Then they have the doors,
then
right?
Then they have the doors. If it's a small supply, I have another supplier, and then comes everything done, right? So it's economical this way.
I have one issue with pocket doors when clients want pocket doors, and it's not so much an issue with the clients or with the door manufacturer. It's the pocket door hardware manufacturers.
It's a poor thing, yeah.
So it's either a really cheap, ugly-looking handle that can lock or not lock,
yeah,
or it's an extremely expensive one.
Amtec, it's really expensive.
Those are the two options.
There's no middle way.
There's no middle.
No, and especially for privacy, people like pocket door on washrooms. So you either you get that small or round thing, very, very
crappy that you can get at Richelieu, or you can get it at the Onmore.
Home Depot.
Yeah, Home Depot on that board.
Or get Amtec, which is really expensive, and then I take more time, so actually I'm going to charge more. And then there's two or three types of Amtec, and then I have to make a jig, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, this is a thing that there's no solution. Unfortunately, there's no solution.
You want a pocket door, the client, you're going to end up paying a lot of money for the hardware.
So you a door itself is about $400.
Yeah.
Plus the installation, plus the hardware, plus the track, plus the installation of the track. So then it comes to $1,000 easily, easy. So then people putting pocket doors on the house, they have to understand it's going to cost me money.
Versus a regular swing door, you're probably at $500 at the max to get that door.
Exactly.
So even at $1,000, I think you're a little bit less, but it's more than twice the price.
Yeah,
a little bit more.
Depending on the Amtec, yes.
Yeah.
Then there's two or three models and models Amtec. They vary price, but they are about $400 or more.
I can't stand the clients when they start jumping onto the train about they want the door painted one color and they want the trim painted another color. And then it's a series of pocket doors.
I just had a project like this. I met the painter when he was painting. He was crying.
Yeah.
He was crying.
There's nothing to do but cry.
Yeah.
Because it is so difficult to paint that, to get it properly done. And you only get one shot at that point. And it's just, it's nerve-wracking. The latest trend now I'm seeing is that it's not different colors. It's different sheens. Now interior designers are getting on this whole different sheen train. So I want the ceiling to be flat. I want the crown molding to be satin. I want the walls to be eggshell. And you're like going, all same color, but I want different sheens because when the natural daylight comes in here, it looks like different colors.
Well, yeah, but then there's a cost for
it. There's a cost. So if you want that, sure. But now you're like pimping my ride. You're doing custom painting in a booth now is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Which is very difficult to do.
And then you have to get the right painter. Like this project that I just left, the painters are good. Pretty good. Very good. But then imagine they get a painter who doesn't spray. But there are painters, they don't spray.
Some clients like brush strokes.
It's like,
I don't understand. That's not me.
That's horrible.
I don't understand. Yeah. I like factory finish. I want the trim at the end of it to almost look like it came out of the same place where the cabinetry came from.
When I see a painter spray my work and then goes nice, wow, that's nice. I can put on my Instagram, take pictures close. Nobody's going to see any problem. When it's brush, now I have to step back, put a filters like this.
You ever, I worked with a painter and I've worked with him a few times and he got in my face because I was doing a few of the pieces of the trim work. And I'm not a trim guy like you guys, right? I know a thing or two and I can handle myself on my own speed. Okay, I'm not Superman fast, but then he came along and he was like, listen, do you want to tone down on the nails? Just kind of reduce the nails a little bit. And when he said that to me, you can only imagine what I want to do, right? And I did it. I just toom, 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 toom. And he just walked away from me. And I was like, don't ever ask me to put less nails, okay? Because that's just going to make me put more nails.
Well, my beginnings, I work for this guy. On Subdivision was like my first year. And then I remember he put in a piece of baseball like this. He was the crew leader. A piece of baseball like this. He put like 20 nails. The supervisor came in and said, how many names you put there?
You just needed four, maybe a fifth one in the middle, and that was it.
That's it. Not a 5-inch piece, a two and one in the middle. That's it. There are people, they sometimes the baseball doesn't go. It's a corner, right? So then nails are not going to fix. Just clean up behind the baseboard. Find another solution, but not nails.
Maybe what I start doing now is, you know how the drywall guys come in and they deliver the drywall and all the mud? And you get a whole skid full of mud. You get boxes all set up in one corner or one part of the house. I think I'm going to bring in a box of nails. Just boxes of it on a pallet and just park it there and see the expression of the painter and see what he thinks. He goes, dude, you're not using all those nails, are you? just to piss them off. But no, like it's all about setting it up properly. If you want to be respectful, you want to put just enough there. But sometimes you're fighting the old houses. Like there's a little bit of movement. It shifted. And then it's not about making it exactly perfect. It's just about making it true. Like it has to flow with everything, right?
Sometimes I notice one of my projects, I noticed that the framer on the second floor was not the same guy on the main floor. Seriously. All the openings, I noticed like, the openings are tight. And then, oh, come on. So I always tell
What do you leave? You 2.5 or 2?
2.5. Everybody leaves 2. And it has to be 2.5 because 3/4, 3/4.
Yeah.
And you have 1/4 inch for each side to play, right? So this guy did 2.5 on the second floor. And the main floor, he did 2. Not the same framer. He probably his helper, his whatever, but not the same framer. Both houses. Two houses side by side. So then these things I can notice also.
But you'll notice as soon as you put that first door in, you're measuring it first. That's when you notice it.
Because I have to measure just to make sure that the handles are okay. So then, no. See, if it's a half, okay.
You can get away with 2, but it'll create a headache. And if it's not plumb.
If it's a double
if
door.
If both sides are not plumb, then you're going to have a problem.
If it's a double door, it's a nightmare. Only a little bit more. So
you need 2.5 all the time. Yeah. Simple as that.
I had builders 2 years ago. They were not builders, but they were building a house for somebody. And he didn't know it was supposed to be 2.5. And he framed the entire house 2 inches. Oh, my God. It was a big house in this field by the lake. So then, okay, whatever. But then we made it. But then the guy
was it tight on RVs?
A little bit. There's a couple doors that we had to take. And then
you plane in the back of the jam?
Yeah. And then I bought a planer, a portable planer, just for this.
Just a planer?
A thickness planer.
Yeah, it makes sense, right?
It stays on my trailer. I use like once a year. But then when I use, it's for this. So then also, if that doesn't work, and then before doing the hinges, we shave a little bit at the back. And then make again, right?
You're getting a lot of clients asking you to do all the custom millwork as well, too, like the built-ins and... Yeah. You get into the fireplace. I used to enjoy doing that. I used to like looking at the fireplace mantles and trying to figure out something different, something new, using a collection of different moldings and just trying to figure out different ways of trying to do stuff, right? Right on site.
Yeah, a few years ago, like back in between 2012, 2017, I had a shop, a kitchen shop. Then I had to close, didn't go well. No, obviously the time wasn't good. Then I got into cabinetry. But then when I closed, and then I swear, no kitchens, no way. And then even that, I did once a year. But then I decided, no, wall units. So then my whole social media work is around wall units in finished cabinetry.
Yeah.
So fireplaces is nice. It's one day I can do anywhere. I can do on the site I'm working, just bring on site and install. I did this a couple of times and worked because the space I know, right? And people are now getting into different type of fireplaces, like with a mantle in white oak.
Okay. Right?
Or I did the last one I did was a 3D type of thing. Was like step, which makes like a 3D. Pretty nice. It was the homeowner came up with this idea, and then I thought, no, I want to do this. Let's do it.
Out of poplar?
I had to do MDF.
At MDF.
Yeah. Okay. But it was like a step, like a 1-2, like a staircase.
Yeah.
Flip on site.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, so pretty nice. Then put a thick mantle on top. Well, the space wasn't too big. She didn't want it too big, but the experience was nice. Then I was imagining how if we do that in a 6-foot wide fireplace would be nice, right? But the fireplaces back in a few years ago was much more than now. I think people are going to stone and all those things are on the fireplace.
There's some now with the fireplaces. They're doing it with stone.
Yeah.
So they're taking the ideas that have already been done in wood and mantles and whatever dressing you're going on the sides, and they're trying to do it in stone, which is just so much more expensive. It looks nice.
Yeah, no, a massive slab.
Done right with a vein slab or something like that, but the cost comparison is insane.
It's probably a slab. No, they take a slab.
You have to buy that. You own the slab, and then it's all fabrication at that point, and that's not cheap.
No, and installation is not cheap either.
No.
So I remember one that was like this, was a full slab. There was an 8-foot ceiling. No, so 8-foot ceiling was even much. It was $10,000 that the owner paid for the fireplace slab.
Just the fireplace.
The three sides. The sides were like probably a foot, but the front was 5 feet. Right? So and then 8-foot ceiling, $10,000. Wow, it's a lot of money. He can get away with a fireplace mantle done in MDF wood for less than $2,000.
Do you think, Charles, like, sometimes I'll see trim guys do certain work and they go a little too much? Like, there's a lot of, I'm talking about stairs or just returns, and there's a lot of up and down and around and chopping this and all this other
stuff.
Like
with the baseboard.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And all of a sudden I'm like, are you doing that for the house that's being built, or are you doing that for the gram? Like, which one are you doing it for? Because I get the sense that you're trying to do it for the likes. And I always have the mindset that no trade is the most important trade on a job site. You all work together.
Yeah.
So if you want to be the spotlight of all this intricate baseboard flying around all over the staircase and around certain things and stuff, it's going to stand out. It's not going to blend into as a home. So I get nervous about when I start seeing the close-ups of that, because I want to see what the room looks like at that and see if it works or not. Because for the most part, it never works for the room. It works for the gram, but it doesn't work for the room.
Think about this. I collect those posts, right? Because I think that guy spent a lot of time. And then I tell my carpenter, so this guy, he spent time. And we don't have that time to spend. And it's not really the job to spend. But then one job, I told him, let's do like this. Because,
unfortunately, let's try it out?
Yeah, let's try it out. The try it out wasn't to show, was because of the situation we got into. The supplier didn't deliver all the doors. Okay. Supplier didn't deliver the casings. And then, okay, so I'm going to do that.
You guys are there.
I had time.
Yeah. Right?
So then I stepped back, didn't work, and then let him do it. And then I told him, look, these are the pictures, this is the situation, do like this guy here, make your thing. And he did, like, change direction, cut pieces in a half mile. He did, it was nice. What was the situation? But I always told him, look, these people, they have time. Especially those type of stairs, they have to change direction 3-4 times. So either they are doing for the likes, and I agree. So then it's going to be thousands and thousands of likes. But then are they doing this for every time?
They should do that, put the post, but put a dollar value attached to it.
Yeah, that's another thing.
So if this took you 10 hours to do, and it's just this one corner, and then charge your rate. So whatever, if you're a two-person team, you're charging $150 an hour, let's say, and that's your going rate. So now you basically just cost a client there almost $2,000 for that one little detail. Exactly. Would the client pay that all the time? Maybe no. 9 times out of 10, nope.
No,
they will not pay that.
There are projects that you make money enough. A carpenter is making money enough. And there are projects that we are not making money enough. So to do that. And there are projects that, you know what, this is too much. And then we don't have the time. We don't have the money allocated for this.
Yeah.
Here's what it is. But then there are things in the stairs. I'd like to have the baseboard going along the stringer and then the landing. I like that.
Keep on carrying it all throughout.
But then when it comes to the shoe molding going along also, I avoid. Because and then kind of gets too busy, and then the shoe molding is like 1.5.
So you terminate the shoe mold at the start, at the landing, and the top or the bottom of the staircase.
Yeah.
But you carry the base on the staircase.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you that the stringer, adding the base makes the stringer finished.
Yeah.
Right, but if you add a shoe mold there, it breaks the stringer from the base now.
And it depends on the width of the stringer.
Yes.
So it kind of eats the whole.
If width. You have space or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like these days, I'm not a huge fan of shoe mold, but your house has to be good, and well, you can't be scribing every baseboard, well, right?
If the floor is not that bad,
yeah,
not really bad. Like if the house is, let's say, a new home, right? Then the scribing would be okay. But I got one couple of years ago that was a renovation by Dunford area. We had to scribe everything. We charged for it. The contract was okay. But it was a lot of a back and forth because the floor starts one way, ends another way. So then when they do renovations, they don't do a new subfloor on the second floor. On the main
for the
floor.
Most part, they don't.
Yeah. So the third floor, yes. But then, so it's still. still.
So then, and you got to factor that in. So running a business, you have to still factor all this in.
Yeah.
If there was an unlimited budget and you had all your tools there and you got a whole finishing crew there, sure. Well, we could do everything.
One thing always happens when we have windows that we have to do the jam extension.
Yeah.
So I never find anywhere any window installer is going to get all the four corners 100% the same distance to the face of the drywall.
They're concerned about making it uniform on the exterior.
But then,
but it should technically, I would say, the interior trumps the exterior.
Exactly. So then it's never four corners equal. Never, never, ever. So then we scribe. We scribe like cabinetry scribing.
Yeah.
And then we can take 4 hours in a window. We can. So then I have to account for that. So then if you have a project, is every single window, like I just priced one big job, which every single window, about 41 windows, is with the gem extension.
All scribed?
No, I don't know. It's gonna be scribed.
Oh, you haven't done it yet. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't done it yet, but it's a new build, and hopefully the framing is okay. Hopefully it is.
I never liked gem extensions coming from the window. I think the gem extensions belong to the trim. They should handle it, right? But most window manufacturers will offer that sale to be a part of the sale of the window.
I've never seen a window manufacturer getting like a really deep gem.
Not if it's an extreme deep one, they won't. Yeah. But the problem I have is that for the most part, they use finger joint pine.
Yeah.
And I can't stand that. And it's just like, you, if you paint it, you can see it. I can still see painted finger joint pine against poplar.
And some of them, they have a like a groove in between.
Yeah.
They like take the joint.
Yeah.
Joint or the original one to the old one on the factory, and then becomes one deep one, right? I saw this in one of the projects. So they came with the windows pretty nice, but then it was joined and there was a line there. So yeah, so is what it is, right?
How do you feel about all the new, I mean, you're getting a lot of clients and designers now. The whole trimless, right? No casing. And then, you know what I mean? Like they're now trying to, you're getting a lot of sauce hinges doors. You're getting the invisible doors now.
I love the sauce hinges.
Sauce hinges too. I love all this stuff. But the problem I don't like is when you get companies using inferior products in these applications. So relying heavily on plastic corner beads or relying heavily on plastic resets. You know what I mean? And then, and all of a sudden, if you're moving furniture, you're moving the vacuum and you hit it.
Yeah.
If it hits wood, it's a little mar, you touch it up with paint, it's done. But if it's all drywall based, it's going to be painful to fix.
So this thing about the trimless, it's a modern houses, right? So then.
Yeah.
Is the look is nice. Can say different. It's very, very nice. The baseboard, when there's baseboard, is under the drywall. Doors have to be sauce hinges.
Yeah.
Which I love them. I really don't have opinion about being trimless. It's less work for me, which means less profit, which means the owner is going to figure out how much I'm charging per door, which is not ideal.
But is it really less work for you? Because sauce hinges and installing those doors are more challenging.
No, yeah. The sauce itself is more work and then have to have investment. So I remember seeing a guy on Instagram last year, he did the saws hinges machining with a drill, and was all the radios was all bad. And he put on Instagram like, "Oh, this is a professional." So what? So then I bought my jig from California, cost me some money, mm-hmm. plus shipping, right? Plus the time. The FedEx was.
But it's really designed good. Specifically designed for this. Designed
for the saws hinges. So yeah. All my radios, everything was okay. Right. So then comparing one to another. So, yeah, it has more work. And then what are we talking in the beginning about the technology? I seen people doing saws hinges with they make their own jigs. So, yeah, how are we going to find the radios? Right. So in the wood jig, how are we going to do this? I am a favor and I became a jig guy.
Yeah.
If I need something and I need a jig and the jig is going to be better, I go for it. I don't care. Because I know my final product is going to be the clean line with the router. Instead of trying to do with the wood. Nothing against the people doing with wood. Because I started like this also, now with the regular hinges. But then if we have this thing about you have someone able to do a jig for you. So like the one in California or Michelle from Mahogany Carpentry is doing in 3D. Like last year I bought like probably 50 jigs from him. Because I had this project with every single thing was different. So then he was fed up of me. But we made it.
But that's how you look at it. You look at a job coming up. You look at what their details are all about.
Exactly.
And then you look at, okay, well, do we have the right tools that we need to make this happen? If not, what tools do we need?
Exactly.
And then you assess it. Okay, is that just going to be stupid expensive? Or can we do an alternative version of that and then still work it? And then we figure out the hourly at that point.
Pocket door is always expensive. Saws hinge is going to be always expensive. Plus the hardware, right? So if it's a trimless, so then they probably gonna use some hardware which is like inset, flush with the door, not the regular one. Something is different. Like the, had a project last year in Aurora, and every single piece of hardware came from Portugal. Every single one. So I don't have a jig for this.
Did they order more than they needed just in case?
No. But then there's one hardware they ordered from India. It's pretty nice. Half round each side to make a half circle.
Okay.
And then it was two double doors, French doors.
Okay.
And then both sides having the same half circle in brass, solid brass. Beautiful. $5,000 each.
I believe it.
From India. So then I never thought India would make those types. Right? So and then everything else came from Portugal, all the mortise. So then and this is not a American standard. So then I have to get all the jigs for. So and then I didn't have any sample with me. So then even worse. And I have to rely in manuals. So then kind of, and I had to price thinking about this because I had to do the jigs. I had to spend my time studying the thing. There are also barn doors and all the types of tracks that were completely different. So then when I have to spend time with the jigs or learning something, I have to account for that. Because like I put a post today on my Instagram says, my price is not is based on my talent, not on your budget.
Yep.
Because I have to learn something
100%
that I don't know and then you want. And then I have to spend my time. And then I spend my time on site. I don't spend my time at home figuring out things because I don't have my tools at home. Right? Even if I have my trailer, so I'm not taking everything and start spending my free time to learn something. No, I'm going to do
outside. I think a lot of these younger Finnish carpenter people are too focused on just looking the part instead of being the part. You know what I mean?
A lot of people, when I learned this, when people say, don't worry, my friend. No worry, my friend is a trouble. It's trouble.
If anyone ever says that?
Yeah, I've seen this a lot of times. Don't worry, my friend, it's trouble.
For me, it's if anybody says, don't worry, you could trust me. I was
Also. Things that I never said, don't worry, my friend, don't and trust me.
You can trust me. I was like, you don't need to tell me that. If you tell me that, then I guess what? I don't trust you.
Because you know what? Everybody can make, I can make mistakes. I have done mistakes.
How you fix them?
Yeah, I fix them. And then I can assess things in one way. And then when I go to do it, it's another way. So I'm human. I can, when I have 5 minutes, half an hour with a meeting with a builder, I can't see everything. I'm not able to see everything. My appointments with a Calendly says 30 minutes, and then we keep it 30 minutes. If I have to spend an hour, I spend an hour, but I still am not able to see. Even if you spend the whole day looking at the house, I'm not able to see everything. So then, if we assess one, then my contract says that. If we assess things, but then we can change things once we assess better. So it's a normal thing.
See, I don't think clients understand. They'll go to places like Brenlo and you've got, the sample room and they'll just keep on looking at the samples, 6-inch piece of trim or whatever it is. And then they'll have the conversation with the designer, architect, whoever it is. And then their friends and they'll go, yeah, I love this profile. I love this profile. But I don't think they realize that when that material arrives on site, it's just lengths of it. Right. And now
a, big wall,
a person big like you room. Has to take these lengths and shape it into this, which for the most part involves a top and two sides. Sometimes it's top and bottom and two sides.
Yeah.
And they have to shape it and put it all together. And there's a lot of custom, like Finnish carpentry is 100% custom carpentry.
It is. They take a casing and a back bend. They are separate. So then who's going to put it back? Put it together. It's me, right? I have to put, then I spend time doing this. And I just don't nail one to another. We have to use glue. Then, so you don't do this on the go. We make a setup to make the back bend, do the casing, leave some off. Then have to go through the house, see where it's tight.
Yeah.
Things are tight. So then people don't realize that they go and buy the material, Brenlo or whoever it is. And then they're going to get in lengths. And then another thing of getting lengths is space. I always tell people, so I need space.
Oh, yeah, on site.
The tools and the material.
Yeah.
They don't realize the material.
I can't leave it outside with a tarp.
Exactly. And I cannot leave in the garage and then you put it inside. No, in the garage.
I always bring that material in, let it climatize to the house. It's important to climatize to the house.
It's like a hardwood floor.
Yeah.
It's wood.
But they don't realize all of these things. They just look at the profile and they're just sold on whatever that profile is.
Other thing nobody realizes, everybody that leaves the door, stand right. you don't leave the door stand right for a week.
It'll bend.
Exactly, put it flat.
You're always flat.
Right? So then the other project was doing two houses side by side. One house I knew was going to take a few weeks to get there. So then when they delivered, put it flat. And then I don't have any problems. But if they leave a day or two, it's not a problem. So you're going to get it, hinge, and then hang. It's fine, right? People don't realize what is involved behind things that I have to do. Now, for example, I email everybody asking, have switches, plugs, outlets through the house. They are not connected to the same breaker because I still have a table saw. I still have something.
15 amp.
Yeah.
I know.
Because they get one outlet. So I'm going to do one outlet. So my vacuum and my table saw is 15 amp each. They go together, trips the breaker.
All the time.
And because a few years back, the electrical authority started asking for the arc fault
in the bedrooms,
and now it's everywhere.
Oh, I can't stand then it.
The
dumbest thing ever.
2 years ago, in this big project in Mississauga, we were fighting with this because the electricians install arc fault everywhere.
It always trips.
What's the code? So then we're like, no, work 5 minutes, go back to reset the breaker, and couldn't do anything. So then there was a limit that he had to install breakers without arc fault to let us work, because everything was powered there. And then plus all the trades working. And then...
And here's the kicker now. You finally finish the house, you give the house to the clients, and all of a sudden, certain breakers will just magically start to trip. And that's because the arc fault breakers have already lost their strength.
Oh.
They're damaged because there's a lifespan on these arc faults. Mm. So the more times they trip, the closer they get to the lifespan. So now if you're doing it on a job site and you got people using 15 amps over and over... You're killing the life of this breaker. And then this is what electricians have taught me. And now homeowners are like, why is this always tripping? Why is this always tripping? And I'm like, because you abused it when it was being built.
Yeah, one plug, one outlet with one breaker. So it's, of course.
Right? Best thing I ever did when we did an underpinning job, and it was the underpinning crew that came up to me. It was DGR. And they said to me, it was Manny, we need at least a minimum six. Separate breakers, 20 amps, because we have all these breakers that are going to be digging away at the dirt, which was really thick dirt, compacted really well. And I was like, we never tripped a single breaker ever during the entire process of doing the work there.
You know what this guy said to you? It's what I try to tell people. And some of people say, no, you're asking too much. I'm not asking too much. So I need work, have tools, right? So then I need to keep going. I can't go in the basement all the time tripping breakers. I can't do this. I have to keep going. Then, because if I let it go, so nobody knows the time I spend idle. Nobody knows the struggle I had. And then when it comes to, you didn't finish yet? Well, yeah, I didn't finish.
Yeah, I spent half my day.
Yeah. And I'm not the only one working. There's people outside working. They use tools.
Yeah.
And the people work outside, they are not relying yet everything in cordless. So I have my cordless set, but then I still have cordless.
It's the sauce, yeah. So the miter and the table.
When I ask my builders or contractors, oh, give me more outlets and give me this, I know that I need that. I know I need the space. I need the power. It's not a luxury. It's something that I'm going to make my work flowing okay instead of struggling.
But in all fairness, the young and new GCs, they should be already well-versed in this.
There are new people.
They should understand this.
Yeah, but they don't. They think, like, I found that there are new people getting into the general construction. They think we have to work on top of each other, or we have to work in the middle of the garbage.
You don't have to.
No, we don't have. Exactly.
No.
So then, or you have to work in a messy house.
No.
Like I said, when I had my shop, I used to say, a wood shop doesn't have to be messy, doesn't have to be dirty. And the job site, we make dirty, we make all the offcuts, but we clean.
Yeah.
And then time to time, we start cleaning everything, swap the floor. No, we do a nice job site. But we don't have to work in the middle of the garbage or on top of all the trades. And imagine if it's a small house, right? So then I am trimming the stairs, and then the electrician is coming down the stairs, or I have to step out. The stairs not wide enough. Things like this. So
it makes it more difficult for everybody involved.
And it's because this was the old time.
Yeah.
The old time, everybody was like this. The old time people, the builders or the GCs, they would say, if you don't want to, go home. Because there are also somebody else to take the space.
I know, but the old time was also rarely a pocket door. Rarely, you know, continuous trim from the base to the... rarely you had back bend. Like, it was... that wasn't the case, right? I want to ask you a few. We're getting close to wrapping up soon. I can continue this all day. But I want to ask you a few. Obviously, you're a scriber versus a miter.
Say again?
For joints. If you're doing, are you scribing baseboards? Are you scribing...
coping?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Coping. Coping. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Coping.
I learned baseball with coping.
Do you prefer it over mitering?
I prefer.
Okay.
But I, unfortunately, because we deal with a 7-inch baseboard and it's popular, so I try few methods to with a jigsaw, for example, and or cutting the base with a miter saw and then try...
The straight point, yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't go as smooth like I wish, but I found someone in the States, they have this kind of molding type of thing, then there's a liquid and then you made a molding around your baseboard, then you go with a router and then coping.
I think I've seen that. Yeah.
And then I wanna get
clever,
that.
It's smart.
Yeah, it's very smart. I wanna get that because once I get, and then I have to, you know, everything that all the tools I buy, I have my time to think and plan. If it's gonna cost benefit, and also I'm gonna plan this on site.
Of course.
Because I have to have a bench just to do this, and how everybody's gonna be, not the carpenter's gonna be involved on this and doing right. Coping is a better system, a way better. If it's like a subdivision or 5-inch baseboard, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, just miter and make it tight.
When it comes to 7, 8, 9 inches,
it's a different story.
It's difficult.
And especially if it's not even flat stock. If it's an intricate panel, like or a base or whatever, and there's, I don't know, whatever, three or four different shapes on it, then you cope it, right?
It's complicated.
Are you installing backbend onto the casing before the installation of the trim or after?
We do the legs.
Okay.
We do the legs, but the headers we leave off, because I've been noticing that it's way better to put the legs after, and then the backbend gets the miter properly. It's way better.
Is anybody doing plinth blocks anymore?
No.
Nobody's touching plinth blocks anymore.
Unless it's a very traditional house, which I haven't done traditional for years.
I always see it at the suppliers, and I'm like, I like this.
You know, like another thing that nobody's doing anymore is B-board. Like you have a baby, B-board on the room, on the bedroom. Nobody's doing it anymore.
Well, they do it. They sell it at Home Depot in sheets of 4x3, right?
Come on, if you call Brenlow, they don't have in stock.
They don't have any
because I need it for...
Do they have V-groove or anything like that, or is it just a bead board?
No, B-board they don't have. The V-groove I didn't ask.
But nobody wants it?
No, nobody has it. Also, I had this cabana, a pool cabana, and then I had to put the B-board. That was the only option we had. So then I had to go outside GTA to get one with a kitchen supplier, not even trim supplier.
What is it? The market doesn't like it? Clients don't like it? I like it.
Like, I remember back in the day, every family with a small kid, B-board on the bedroom.
Yeah. Chair rail, that's it. Yeah.
Nobody likes that.
Because that kid's going to start throwing things at the wall.
Yeah.
They can only get as high as the chair rail. That's why you put the B-board there. No, that's interesting you bring that up. But I guess right now, most of the ceiling treatments, they're not being done out of wood. They're being done out of plaster or foam.
Yeah, there's a new molding, like a styrofoam molding type of thing.
Yeah.
Looks real, looks nice.
Yeah.
And is, I don't know if it's cheaper, I don't know what the cost for this, but then it looks a lot better than because it's very smooth, and then once it's painted, it gets a lot better. And then also they come in different shapes.
Yeah, it's a marriage of the two worlds, right? Yeah. So if it's done well, it looks great, and it totally passes, I believe.
Even
it.
Beams, I've seen beams
they're doing it
like
as well.
Wood,
yeah.
And they're doing styrofoam. A lot cheaper, a lot easier.
One of the nervous things that I ever saw on a job site was from a Finnish carpenter where they were putting a coffered ceiling up and they were just spray gluing blocks to the face of the drywall to anchor the beams.
You have to have a framing before. Right? So,
I didn't like it.
One thing, a couple years ago, I was doing this house in Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
And then was frame staged, and then I told the builders, you know, you have to make this, you have to make the backups for me. But after the drywall, I don't see anything. So then we plan between the pot lights, he made the backup, and then we're okay. So the I think my approach would be do the backup before the drywall, and then we know where they are, and then we don't have to do anything, and then it's fine.
You got to anchor to structure.
Exactly. So then the beam's still up, right?
Because I can see that way of doing it, you're going to see cracks in the paintwork. I guarantee you. Because you're only adhering to the face of the drywall. The face of the drywall is just to stop a fire for 20 minutes. That's what the face of the drywall is designed for. So I'm not a fan of it, but I was just shocked to see that's the way they did it. And I didn't like it. So I left it alone. The other thing with building code never applies to you guys other than
fireplaces.
Fireplaces amount, the wood, combustible materials has to be away from an open source or what have you. But these days, nobody's allowed to put a wood-burning stove or a wood-burning fireplace in a new house or a new construction. And then there's rules on gas as well. And then our current government is trying to get rid of all that stuff and make everybody watch a TV instead of a fireplace, right?
Yeah.
So they want electric and things like that. But I definitely think that hinges, I think it should be building code where they're all ball-bearing.
Should.
No more.
Ball-bearing is the best one.
Yeah. I just think that should be code. I know they're more expensive, but they'll always stay true, and you'll never have movement, and you'll never have any hinge dust.
And the pin is inside with the grease.
Yeah.
And plus the ball bearing system. So then this is always, I was comparing one ball bearing, no ball bearing. So then the regular one, even if it's the same size 4x4, that's going to squeak a little bit over the time. Not on the first week, not on the first month, whatever, but it's going to squeak.
Yeah.
Right? That's normal because it's metal rubbing into metal. So then gonna happen, right?
That's just me, but I don't write code, so I just think that it should be. But
the only thing my job is related to code is fireplace. Everything else is like,
there's just rules, but those rules come out of the specs from the actual unit itself. They'll tell you, they'll dictate where you could put it, right?
My custom homes, for example, everybody, I think it's a flow, everybody started using 4x4 and then everybody's used 4x4, right? So everybody started using 1¾-inch door, and then we go, or type of door, or this. Everybody goes. or the designers. It's like this. It's not if you get someone who invented something different, that's a bonus. But it never is.
Thanks, Charles, man. I really appreciate you coming into the show and talking about this. It's always good to have Finnish carpenters on the show. Charles from @the_Finnish_carpenter, 416-825-9335. You ready for the 12 questions?
Yep.
What's your favorite construction word or phrase? Come a little closer.
Didn't get done yet?
I guess that happens all the time, eh? You can never finish carpentry fast enough.
No.
But then there's always clients or designers or friends of clients coming in going, what if we did this?
Yes.
I see all that wood you have there. What if we did this?
Or what if we change this?
What's your least favorite tool?
Sawzall.
You guys don't use a sawzall.
Sometimes I have to use. Like to opening more the opening.
It's true.
I hate that.
True. What do you miss from your childhood?
The friends.
What construction sound do you love?
Cordless drill. I like my drill. That's why I like my drill.
Drill driver or the impact drill?
The drill driver.
Oh, the drill driver. What's your favorite beverage?
I'm into tea now.
I was just in Turkey, so I had a bunch of black tea. I was constantly drinking black tea. It was good. Favorite curse word?
I don't have any.
Don't
have any special.
Nothing. Nothing that comes into mind when something happens. Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Few years I'm into Tesla, but I had a Mini Cooper once, and then I love both of them. So then Tesla is like, I keep telling my daughters, oh, you're going to buy a Tesla next November, my birthday. So you're going to buy a Tesla for me next November?
Mini just launched an EV.
Yeah, I know.
I saw the ad for that. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Well, that's interesting. When I got here in 2002, I thought, no, I want to be a paramedic. And but then life took me all the way and become this, but it's fine. But if I had to go back, I would do it.
We had Mike Huber on the show from Huberwood, and he was a paramedic for many years, and then he became a carpenter. And that was an interesting show. It was an interesting story, right? So he had his reasons why he left being a paramedic. He paid his dues.
It's a tough job, I know.
It's a very tough one, right? Yeah. What profession would you not like to do?
Window cleaning outside, because I'm afraid of heights.
Yeah, I'm not in the little saddle, the little chair or whatever, and you swing along.
So when we have to do ceilings, which is above 8 feet, I send them. I don't go, so I just stay on down.
Even if you don't get like steps and like get a three step and put planks on it, or no?
No, steps on plank, no way. I don't go up on more than 7 foot. My small step ladder is about seven feet. I don't go up more than that.
So you're just a step up from an electrician. Electricians always have that famous 4 foot ladder. That's all they carry. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Welcome.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Thanks very much, Charles. I really appreciate it. We covered so much, and I definitely want to encourage the younger generation to understand that this is not a... it's not a 6 month career.
No, it's not. It takes years, but it's a very
fulfilling career if you choose this one.
Yeah. I know a lot of young carpenters now. They are on Instagram. I follow them. They are pretty good. So they learn the trade. That's the way to do. It's not 6 months, not a year, because there's a lot of secrets. There's a lot of situations. And I think depends how, who is teaching you.
Yeah.
If it's a guy who is really wants you to go further, you're going to learn a lot.
Yeah.
But no, depends on the situation.
I agree with you. Thanks again. Thank you. Really appreciate it for your time. Thank you. We're out of here, Angelina.